Okay. Ding. All right, so now we can move on to the next sutta. And just to kind of remind you what is going on here, the idea is that we are trying to follow what the Buddha did, or the Buddha to be, what he did in his practice. And we have been focusing on the idea of right view so far, how the Buddha to be viewed the world, and then what made him go forth and become a monastic based on that right view. And now we're going to start to look more at the practical side. Based on that right view, what happens? Well, the first thing that happens is, of course, that the Buddha goes forth. He becomes a monastic. We know that from the biography of the Buddha, the autobiography, how he decides to go forth. And then once he's gone forth, of course, he starts his practice. And this next sutta is very much based on how the Buddha was practicing at the time after he went forth. There are a few suttas about that. One of the suttas that I haven't included this time is called the Dvaita Vitakka Suttas on the two kinds of thought, which also is a very beautiful sutta, but I can't do the same suttas every time, so I decided to leave that one out. Instead, I'm going to focus on the sutta which I have not talked about before, and this is this sutta here called Fear and Dread, the Bhaya Bhairava Sutta, found in the Majjhima Nikaya number 4, the fourth sutta of the middle-length sayings of the Buddha. And the Buddha talks about some of the striving and some of the dedication that he had on the path before his awakening here. And this is what this is about. So let's see what happens. Let's see what we can get out of this particular sutta. So as always, it starts off with thus have I heard, or so have I heard, which is the idea that this has been passed down in oral transmission. Just to be clear where we are in this little booklet, we are on page 18 on this little booklet, in case you have any doubt. So have I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Savati in Jeta's grove, another Pindika's monastery. Then the Brahmin Janusoni went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. Janusoni was one of the famous Brahmins in Savati. He was one of the chaplains, or one of the Brahmins of the king. And so the king relied a lot on this Brahmin Janusoni. And he was a very staunch Buddhist, this Janusoni, and he often went to the Buddha, many conversations between him and the Buddha found in the suttas. They exchanged greetings. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side and said to the Buddha. So always a bit of greetings and polite conversation first, so everyone is nice and relaxed. Yeah, a couple of jokes probably in there, thrown in there, maybe, I don't know, possibly. But anyway, so then what did he say? He said the following here. Master Gotama, those gentlemen who have gone forth from the lay life to homelessness out of faith in Master Gotama, have Master Gotama to lead the way, help them and give them encouragement. Yeah, again, you have this idea of going forth out of faith. You don't go forth out of any reason, but you go forth out of faith. You really think that there's something powerful going on here. You have confidence in these teachings. There's a real going forth. It's not some kind of spurious reason, but you have a real reason for going forth. And because of that, you have the Buddha to lead the way, Pubangama, is the Pali word here, to lead the way. In other words, the Buddha goes first, right? The Buddha to help them, Bahukaro, someone who does much for another, Bahukaro, you see down here. And he gives them encouragement. Samadapeta means to encourage somebody. And those people follow Master Gotama's example. Yeah, this is this last thing down the bottom here. You follow the example of Master Gotama. So again, this is what I have been talking about all the time. And when we talk about the life of the Buddha prior to his awakening, the idea of talking about this is the idea that we learn from how the Buddha to be practiced, the idea is we want to practice in the same way. Yeah. So the Buddha is actually the example for us. He is not just some kind of elevated person who is unreachable by ordinary people. No, his way of practice is actually the example for every one of us. And this is kind of the purpose of this way of looking at the suttas. That is so true, Brahmin. Everything you say is true, Brahmin. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's translation. Sometimes it's kind of interesting. It's a different way of translating. Evametang Brahmana, Evangetang. So it is, Brahmin. So it is. That would be a more literal translation. So, and then he goes on. But Master Gotama, this is the Brahmin Janasoni speaking. Remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest are challenging. It is hard to maintain seclusion and hard to find joy in solitude. Yeah? And this is kind of an important point. I think it's kind of obvious to anyone who has tried this. Remote lodgings in the wilderness. If you live way off in the wilderness somewhere, away from civilization, it's kind of difficult. Yeah? The Pali word here is dur ambisambhavani, hard to exist, or something like that, is what it means. Hard to exist on those lodgings. Yeah, lodging here is basically just a resting place in the forest, is really what it means. It is hard to maintain seclusion and hard to find joy in solitude. Can you rejoice in solitude? Can you rejoice in staying completely by yourself in the forest, and the only company are snakes and mosquitoes? Makes it even worse, right? If you're just the only company, you have snakes and mosquitoes. And of course, the point here is that the whole point of seclusion is to find happiness in it, is to enjoy it. That's kind of the point. And the idea here is that when you have samadhi is something you practice in seclusion. And the more people are around you, the more likely you are to lose that samadhi. So once you get to the point of samadhi, that's when you start to enjoy the practice of seclusion. This is what this is all about here. This is why we're talking about these things. That's when you can enjoy these things. This is the story of this monk in Sri Lanka. He was a European monk, and he was very super. He just recently died, and he was very famous in Sri Lanka. He looks like one of these ancient arahants when you see him. And he built this three-walled kutis, a hut with three walls. And the idea of having three walls, that then it feels a bit like a cave, right? If you have one opening wall, it's like a cave. The problem with missing one wall is that when you're sleeping at night, all the animals come in. Yeah. So when you wake up in the morning, there's a kind of a snake sleeping next to you. Yeah. Apparently this happened to him all the time. The snake, oh, good morning, Mr. Snake. Yeah. And you kind of wake up. So when I say that you literally live with the snakes and mosquitoes, actually that's literally true. That's what happens when you live in this kind of forest lodging. So that's kind of interesting. Are you ready? Are you ready for that? No? Okay. Not ready for that. Okay. So maybe don't go to those forests. Go to another forest. Come to the Australian forest. Australian forest is not so dangerous. Come to kind of Jhana Grove. Start slowly, gradually moving in that direction. Have many of you here been to Jhana Grove before? Yeah? Some of you, I know some of you have. Yeah? Many of you have not been to Jhana Grove? No? Okay, no. Okay. So there is the opportunity for you. That's already in the forest. Compared to this, this is like really in the middle of the city. Jhana Grove is like a forest resort compared to this. This is also very nice. I must say, it's actually quite a nice place, but it's still in the middle of the city. It doesn't have that feeling of solitude in the same way. Okay, let's go on. The forest seems to rob the mind of a mendicant who isn't immersed in samadhi. Yeah, or quite literally, Paulo says, who does not gain samadhi, gaining alabha manasa, labha is to gain or to acquire samadhi. So this is the problem, right? That if you're not ready for these seclusions in the forest, you're going to go crazy here. You're going to go nuts. You're going to lose your mind. The mind is going to get robbed. And you don't want to have your mind robbed. It's very handy to have a good mind. Otherwise, you have a problem. And this is a very important point. And what that means is that you shouldn't really go into this very severe solitude until you have a decent samadhi experience. That's when your mind is ready. Why? Because the mind is unbiased. The mind is clear. The mind is not kind of... It does not delude it anymore. Yeah, this is kind of when you come out of delusion, so you're able to deal with reality as it actually is. So what does the Buddha say? That is so true, Brahmin. Everything you say is true. Before my awakening, yeah, before my awakening, when I was still unawakened, but intent on awakening, I too thought. Remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest are challenging. It is hard to maintain seclusion, hard to find joy in solitude. The forest seemed to rob the mind of a mendicant who doesn't achieve samadhi. The Buddha had exactly the same thoughts. Yeah, again, you see the humanity of the Buddha again, that he basically facing the same problems as everyone else. Then I thought, the Buddha to be, there are ascetics and Brahmins with unpurified conduct of body, speech, and mind, who frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forests. Those ascetics and Brahmins, they summon unskillful fear and dread because of these defects in their conduct. So, the reflection of the Buddha here is that if you are not pure in your conduct by body, speech, and mind, then you have a problem. Yeah, we're going into the forest. And of course, someone who doesn't have samadhi, the reason they haven't got samadhi is because they have some defect in their conduct somewhere. That's exactly why you don't achieve samadhi, the deep meditations. Why is this a problem? And the reason it is a problem is because the mind is kind of still deluded. The mind is not clear. And when the mind is deluded, it creates problems where there are no problems. And specifically in this case, if you are unpurified in your conduct, it means you have some bad conduct or whatever. One of the things that happens when you have bad conduct is that you tend to see that bad conduct that you have, you tend to also project that onto the world around you. The way you behave towards the world is how you experience the world behaving towards you. Yeah, if you are a person with bad conduct, you tend to think of other people as treating you in the same way. And this is one of the scary things about not being pure in conduct, is that you tend to view the world as frightening precisely because of that. You project onto the world how you experience the world. And of course, if you are living remotely in the forest, your conduct isn't pure, then the forest is going to seem scary because you're going to be afraid that the forest is going to do things to you. And you can imagine that night, we're going to see this later on. I don't know if you have ever been in the forest at night by yourself. Have you been in the forest at night by yourself? It's very interesting. Yeah. I'm like this all the time because I live in a small cutie in Bodhinyana Monastery. Yeah, I can't see anyone. When I go out at night, there's no one around. And actually, it's interesting because some of the sounds in the forest get amplified at night. Daytime, you hardly hear it, but at night, you really hear it, right? Because your mind is really kind of attuning to those things. And thing is that in daytime, yeah, that's the bird or whatever. At night, is it a bird or is it something else? Yeah, everything changes because you hear things in a different way. And the more you have of these defilements in the mind, the more unsure you are about these things. And one of the strange things about Australia is that in Australia, we have lots of kangaroos, right? Those of you who have been to Australia, you know all the kangaroos down there. You know what it's like. And when the kangaroo is walking, sounds like a human being. Because when they jump, no. But when they walk, they sound like a human being. So at night, you go out, the kangaroo is walking. You think, oh, human being coming here straight away. Actually, no, it's just a kangaroo here. So this is what your mind starts to play with you at night, right? It starts to play with your senses. And the more you have of unskillful conduct in your mind, the more the mind plays with you and kind of creates things out of nothing. And that's why you have this fear and dread at night when your conduct is bad. You are deluded. The mind creates things because of the delusion. If you have samadhi, delusion is gone. The mind doesn't create things anymore. You hear what is actually there, and that is why you have no fear, even at night in the forest. So all of these Brahmins and the people who live in the forest, unpurified in conduct, they will have fear and dread. So if you want to come and live in the forest, if you want to come and become a nun or a monk at Bodhinyana Monastery, and if you want to be able to really relax, be as pure in your conduct as you can be. Then you can relax. Yeah, wow, no problems. I'm enjoying. And it's actually beautiful to live in the forest like that. The forest in Australia is much more much less dangerous than the forest here. Yeah, the jungle here feels a bit more dangerous. In Australia, it's very kind of open and, you know, and doesn't feel quite the same as the jungle. I think you probably enjoy it, living by yourself. You think you'll enjoy it, living by yourself, yeah? It's actually very nice. You get used to it very quickly. After a while, you don't want to do anything else. You just want to be in the forest. You don't want to have anything to do with the city life, yeah? Ah, city dwellers. All the city slickers. No, I'm being very naughty. I just... it actually is very beautiful to live in the forest by yourself. I can really recommend it. And sometimes it depends how you are brought up. I know Ajahn Brahm always says that in Thailand, the Thai people are often brought up on a diet of ghost stories. Is that true, Venerable? Thai people hear lots of ghost stories when they are children, yeah? So when they become monastics and they have to live by themselves, sometimes they're very scared because they expect to see ghosts everywhere, right? But in the West, you never hear ghost stories when you're a child. You just, it's very different. So because of different conditioning, you have a different reaction to living in the forest. You have a ghost, right? Okay, so you have a ghost anyways. Okay, good. Is it a nice ghost? Is it friendly? Sometimes? Has it hurt you yet? Hurt you in any way? No, not yet. Did it kill anyone? Not yet. Okay. That means you have to have pure conduct, right? Because if your conduct is not pure, then the ghost might do. They like you. Okay. They like you. Okay, good. Yeah. They chase them away for you. You are very lucky. You have like a kind of anti-burglar ghost. Yeah. The ghost keeps the burglars away. That's very fortunate. So that's very, very, very handy. Okay, that's very smart, having a ghost for a guard. That's really wise. Yeah, the bhikkhunis are really kind of wise about these things. So. Okay, so this is the first thing, yeah? So you should not have that bad conduct. And then the Buddha says, it says, but I do not frequent remote resting places in the wilderness and the forest with unpurified conduct of body, speech, and mind. My conduct is purified. I am one of those noble ones who frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest with purified conduct by body, speech, and mind. So he doesn't have anything to worry about. And we can see here how he calls himself a noble one already, even though he's not an arahant yet, he hasn't gone to the end of the path, but here is noble in a slightly different way of the term. Noble in the sense of someone who is striving in a good way and living a righteous life. So if your conduct by body, speech and mind is pure, you are in business. You can come to ordain at Bodhinyana Monastery, Dhammasara Monastery at any time, and you will be okay here. Okay. So, seeing this purity of conduct in myself, I felt even more unruffled about staying in the forest. Yeah, more at ease, no problems, not worried about staying in the forest anymore. Now, the way the Buddha stayed in forest is actually quite scary. We'll see this later on. He didn't kind of hold back. Yeah, he really went for it all the way. So we'll come to this further down. Then I thought, there are ascetics and Brahmins with unpurified livelihood who frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness in the forest. Those ascetics and Brahmins summon unskillful fear and dread because of those defects in their livelihood. So because you have a wrong livelihood, the idea as a monastic is that you're supposed to live on alms. You're not supposed to practice as a doctor, not supposed to practice as a messenger and all of these kind of things, but you're supposed to just live off the alms of the lay people. And if you live because you want to do feng shui, I'm going to teach you how to build your building in the right place with the doors and the face in the right direction, these kind of things, or whatever else it is that you might, and this, I'm not joking, this feng shui is also, you don't find the word feng shui, of course, but you find similar words in the suttas, that monastics do all kind of weird things to earn a livelihood. And a lot of it has to do with omens and kind of predicting the future and that kind of thing. Yeah. Of course, you can imagine if you do that, you know that you are cheating a little bit. And if you're cheating a little bit, you're not going to feel really fully worthy of that support. And because you don't feel very fully worthy, you're going to feel a bit bad about yourself in the forest. The mind is going to start playing tricks on you again. So this is a bad idea, having the wrong livelihood. But I don't frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and forest with unpurified livelihood. My livelihood is purified. I'm one of those noble ones who frequent lodgings in the forest with purified livelihood. Seeing the purity of livelihood in myself, I felt even more unruffled about staying in the forest. All right. Then I thought, there are ascetics and Brahmins full of desire for sensual pleasures, like for the five sense world, right? With acute desire. Tibba raga is the Pali word. Tibba means like strong desire. Yeah. So again, this means that you have a very strong vested interest in the world around you. You want to seek pleasure in that world. And again, that's going to make you vulnerable to when that world around you does not give you those pleasures. Once you want pleasures from that world, you're also going to be fearful of the downsides, the dangers in that world of the five senses. And so because of that, you're going to feel more vulnerable in the forest, right? It's kind of automatic. So you have to give up the strong desires. You notice here, it's only the strong desires that I talked about here. The weak desires, presumably the Buddha-to-be still has some of those weaker desires. Because otherwise he would already be an arahant if he didn't have those. I'm not full of desire. Yeah? There are ascetics and Brahmins full of ill will with malicious intentions. And you can imagine if you have a lot of ill will, it is a very bad idea to live by yourself. Because that ill will is really going to play with you, yeah? And it's going to be incredibly scary. If you have ill will towards the world, you're going to feel like the world has ill will towards you. Those sounds in the forest are really going to be amplified, and you're going to feel incredibly scared when you have ill will like that in the forest. So this is always a very dangerous thing. And after a while, you start to go crazy, basically, quite literally, if you have a lot of ill will. The mind becomes very distorted and goes really bad if that happens. But the Buddha says, the Buddha to be, I have a heart full of love, or loving kindness. Metta, citta is the Pali word here. There are ascetics and Brahmins overcome with dullness and drowsiness. You can see we're dealing with the five hindrances here, one after the other. But I'm free from dullness and drowsiness. When the mind is dull, it is not really capable of seeing things properly and clearly, so you have a problem here. Ascetics and Brahmins who are restless with no peace of mind. My mind is peaceful. When the mind is restless, again, it has all kinds of imagination and things going on, and it creates stuff out of things that don't actually exist. Ascetics and Brahmins who are doubting and uncertain. But I have gone beyond doubt. Yeah, if you have doubt, that's obviously a bad idea when you're hanging out far away in the forest somewhere. Yeah. There are ascetics and Brahmins who glorify themselves and put others down. Yeah, praise yourself and disparage others is another translation here. Yeah. But I don't glorify myself and put others down. Yeah, so this is one of those things. This is very often the ego who wants to do this. If you glorify yourself, you put other people down. Remember the Buddha's teachings about the three kinds of conceit. Superiority conceit, inferiority conceit, and the equality conceit. There is no basis for comparing ourselves to others. You should never think of yourself as better. Never think of yourself as worse. There's no basis for putting anyone in this world down. In fact, the noble ones, people like the Buddha, even though the Buddha clearly is superior, the Buddha never glorifies himself and puts other people down. Yeah, this is one of the qualities of someone who is superior. They don't do that. So if you really are superior, you don't do these things. The sign that you glorify yourself means, in fact, that you are not superior straight away. That is a sign that you don't have that superiority. So this means that you shouldn't be doing it because it shows that you have got things wrong. So remember this. It's very important. It's something people often ask me. They say, you know, well, when we are, you know, when we see other people doing bad things and we have compassion for them, very often we feel superior because we feel better. Yeah, you see this person doing many bad things and I have compassion for them. It means I feel good about myself because they are bad and I am the one who has compassion and they are inferior. But that is the wrong way to think about it. Just because someone else happens to be a person with many bad qualities, and maybe right now you have better qualities, it's always important to remember that these things change very fast. And tomorrow it may be the other way around. They may have the good qualities, you may have the bad ones. And if not tomorrow, maybe next year, or maybe next life, or maybe last life, or whatever. Things are always changing. Never feel superior just because someone else has many bad qualities. Yeah, things change, things move around. Nothing is stable in this world. Never glorify yourself. Never put other people down. Never put yourself down either. Many people put themselves down. They don't have enough self-esteem, not enough sense of self-worth. You're all wonderful people, yeah. You're all doing your best. The very fact that you are coming here, you're trying to do your best, means that you are worthy of self-esteem. You're worthy of respect because of that. So respect yourself because of what you're doing. And even if you fail in every single precept, and that's not going to happen, right? But even if you do that, you're still worthy of respect because you are trying. And this is kind of the point here. So get out of this whole idea of glorifying yourself. Get out of the whole comparison business. No need for any kind of comparison. Comparison is silly. Okay, let's take a 5-minute break at this point. I think this is a good place to take a quick break. So let's do some meditation together. Okay. All right, so any comments or questions, please? Everyone okay? Over here, there's a couple of questions. Okay, at the back there. Yeah, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Ajahn.
Yeah.
The question is, how do one get out of a victim mindset if this person truly believes that they've gone through a tough experience and people are unfair to them, and in their deluded mind, that is their reality, and they have become a victim for their life? How do you basically get out of that mindset? Thank you.
So yeah, it's not a very skillful way of dealing with things to think of yourself as a victim. I mean, in some cases, people are kind of victims because they're, of course, sometimes people get bullied or they get hurt or they get abused. This is also happens in the world. But usually, it is better to kind of take charge of your life rather than think of yourself as a victim. And the answer is always the Buddhist idea to remember that. Other people don't know what they're doing here. Yeah, it's like if you are a victim of a mosquito, it's very different to being a victim of a human being, right? Because a mosquito is like, they don't know what they're doing anyway. A mosquito is just biting you. But actually, human beings are just like mosquitoes. That is the right way of thinking about it. Human beings don't know what they are doing here. They are doing things because of their conditioning, because of their background. And you happen to be where that other person is. And so you become the victim because you happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. The whole idea is to learn to see people in a new way, to see them more like mosquitoes, more like red traffic lights, more like robots than actually as beings that deliberately hurt others. If you see that the other person is deliberately hurting you, that they decide, they choose to hurt you, you're always going to feel like a victim because it feels like you are trapped by this person. But if you think of them as a robot or as a machine or a red traffic light, then you, first of all, it enables you to see them with more compassion and understanding that actually they are the ones who have a problem rather than you, because they are the ones who are mistreating you. You don't really have a problem. They are the ones because they are trapped in this kind of way. But the second thing it allows you to do, it makes it easier for you to walk away, to do something else, rather than allowing yourself to be trapped in that kind of situation. So if you really do feel like you are a victim, it is okay to walk away from difficult situations in life, right? It is okay to be a bit assertive. I remember yesterday someone chatting very quietly over there, and I said to them, "Can you please be quiet?" And they felt really bad about that, and I'm sorry that I didn't really want to make you feel bad, because we have different perceptions of reality. They thought they were not being noisy, and I thought they were being a bit noisy, so we had different perceptions of things. But it's okay to be a little bit assertive and to take charge of your life in that way and say, please. So sometimes if you feel you're a victim, you just have to walk away from that situation. If you are married to someone who really is abusive, you should end that marriage. You shouldn't allow it to continue, because that is just, you're not really taking responsibility for yourself in that situation. It can be very hard to walk away, but sometimes you have no choice. So you, on the one hand, you take responsibility for yourself and you know what you should be doing to have a better life. On the other hand, you start to see the other person in a different way, more like a machine than a human being. And these two things together take a responsibility for yourself, for your own life, and also understanding other people in a new way. When you bring those two things together, it's a powerful combination that can help you resolve difficult situations like that. This is the beginning, but they have to believe these things, to be able to kind of bring them out of that. They have to actually accept that kind of way of thinking about the world. And then there's a chance maybe that they can move in a direction. Other things you can do is see some kind of counselor. Some kind of counselor who can counsel you in the right way. That may also be something useful to do. Do you want to get back on that one? Or are you satisfied with that? Or not satisfied? Or neutral? Or both satisfied and not satisfied? Neither satisfied and not satisfied?
Satisfied. But what if, Ajahn, if it's a karmic tie towards that person, and if you run away, would you not be running away from something you're supposed to experience?
There is no such thing as supposed to be experienced. There is no such thing. Maybe the beginning of the relationship is from karma. It is possible that the reason why you got into that is because of karma, but if you can get out of it, it's because of good karma that you can get out of it. So of course you should try to get out of it if you can. Sometimes people say, oh, you know, I'm getting sick, I should just allow this to happen and take its course, because I'm sick, it's karma, so I should just, you know, stay with it, or I have a terminal illness, you know, I should just kind of live with the terminal illness and kind of allow things to be, because it's karma. Or I should not, these days we talk about euthanasia, of assisted suicide, oh, I shouldn't do that because I should allow things to take its course, because of karma. But we never do that. If you break a leg, you don't say, I shouldn't go to the doctor and fix it, because it's karma, I should let it be. We never think like that. Of course you go to the doctor. You put a thing on your cast on your leg, and so you kind of get it sorted out again. Of course you do that. So the ability to counter whatever is happening, that's also karma. It's a good karma. Yeah, you have that opportunity to fix things up. So it's the idea that you should just let things be is not really Buddhism at all. You should do everything you can to sort it out. That's the Buddhist way. Yeah, you take responsibility. You use the opportunities that are available to get things sorted out. That is the right way of looking at things.
Ajahn,
please.
I have questions regarding this sutta. Regarding the, I think when it comes to dullness and drowsiness, right? I'm not sure how it actually prevents one from staying secluded and enjoying seclusion. Because, I mean, from my personal experience, wouldn't it be much more better when you're in a forest and you feel sleepy all the time and the fresh air is very refreshing to sleep?
Yes, it's good to sleep, but you don't want to sleep all the time. Yeah, that's the problem. If you sleep all the time, you have a problem. You have to have... The point of being in the forest is to gain clarity of mind. The point of being in the forest is to gain mindfulness. It's to gain samadhi. And if you have a lot of dullness and drowsiness, you're not really doing that. If you practice samadhi, you don't have much dullness and drowsiness at all. Your mind is usually very clear. Maybe a little bit after the meal, a little bit at night when you sleep, but then you wake up, and as soon as you wake up, your mind is clear again. You don't kind of walk around like in a cloud all the time. Yeah, some people are always drowsy and dull. Yeah, that's kind of the way some people are. So it's a kind of a state of delusion if you have that all the time. And that state of delusion is going to make living in the forest difficult, because that's what delusion does.
But it wouldn't actually cause the feeling of fear and worry as stated in sutta, right?
Well, it probably will, because you are deluded. The mind is kind of deluded. Mind isn't clear. You're not able to see those sounds and weird things in the forest clearly. The mind will confabulate. It will make things out of it because you are dull. The mind will not actually be able to see them clearly, basically. So that it will lead to problems, quite likely. And very often the dullness and drowsiness, often it is caused by deeper defilements, often it is caused by craving for sensual things, caused by ill will very often. These things often lead to that dullness and drowsiness anyway. So often there is a kind of a more deep-seated problem there as well at the same time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.